This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your weekly hour of old-time radio crime that you can find every Wednesday at relicradio.com. Our first show this week is from the FBI in Peace and War. It's titled Grave Error, first aired September 8, 1954. Then, also from 1954, is Barry Craig, Confidential Investigator, and Zero Hour, his episode from February 2nd.
WBBM FM, Chicago.
The FBI in Peace and War. The FBI in Peace and War is brought to you by refreshing, delicious Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum. Enjoy chewing Wrigley Spearmint Gum every day, as millions do. The lively, long-lasting flavor cools your mouth and freshens your taste. The pleasant chewing adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Another great story based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War. Drama, thrills, action. Tonight's story, Grave Error.
Why not? There isn't a lock made that won't respond to the proper persuasion. Enter, my friend. Once again, Doc Percy has conquered the impossible.
Nice work, Doc. Come on.
I'm with you.
Let's see now. The light switch should be right over here to our left.
Oh, lights yet. Man, this is absolutely my first situation with lights. You're sure the family's not home?
Doc, you move in the wrong circles. The best people never return from vacation till after Labor Day. Ah, just where the blueprint said.
Ah, such elegance. Ham, tell me, why bother with all the intricacies of a racket when all we have to do is lift some of the elegance and call it an evening?
Lift? Doc, what do you take me for, a common thief? Ah, there's the door to the library. The cabinet will be in there.
All right, but my professional reputation is at stake. Who ever thought the day would come when Doc Percy would leave something in a house rather than take it?
Oh, that's another thing. It's not Doc Percy. From now on, it's Dr. Persepolis.
It's what?
Persepolis. Dr. Dimitri Persepolis. Professor of Greek history in the gymnasium at Göttingen.
Greek? Hmm? Ham, are you out of your mind? Who has such an accent? Hungarian, yes. English, yes. French, all right. But Greek? How would I talk like a Greek?
Luck, Doc. Not even a safe luck. This is what we want. Right here, the statuette. Straight from the grave of Amenhotep II. You're looking at 3,000 years of history, Doc. Impressed?
History doesn't impress me. Only cash. Ham, I still say...
Forget it. Everything stays just where it is. Let me have the clay tablet, huh?
Right here.
There's an ancient curse goes with relics stolen from the pyramid tombs of the kings, Doc. Play it your way and we could end up 60 feet under ourselves. Play it mine and we pyramid this deal into a fortune.
Abner B. Hamill, alias A.B. Hamilton, alias Abdul Bey Hamid, was one of the most talented swindlers who ever worked the so-called pyramid game. He and his confederate, Harold Doc Percy, were well above the average swindlers in intelligence and undoubtedly would have been successful in legitimate occupations if they hadn't decided on less legal ways of making a living. Hamill was a big, attractive man with a winning manner and a dark complexion that made him easily accepted in his role of Egyptian scholar.
Yes, sir?
Good evening. My name is Abdul Bey Hamid, the Cairo Society of Antiquities. Please tell Mr. Pomeroy, the curator of the Cosmopolitan Museum, suggested that I call.
Well, there you are, Mr. Hammond. My entire collection. Say, I guess I shouldn't be calling you Mr., should I? It's Bwana or Sahib or something like that, huh?
Sherman, don't be ridiculous.
That's quite all right, Mrs. Pomeroy. The question is often asked. A Mr. is most acceptable, I assure you.
Well, that's good. I'm not much for any kind of lingo, but straight down-the-line American.
How do you like it, Mr. Hamid?
The collection's superb. Really magnificent.
Yeah, well, it should be. Cost me a pretty penny, I can tell you that. I told my wife I couldn't see spending hard-earned dollars for a couple of old statues and vases, but darn, she didn't talk me into it.
Oh, don't you believe it, Mr. Hamid. My husband's become a real antiquities bug ever since he saw that archaeology movie with Gregory Peck. Why, most of our Ramesses and King Minos pieces were selected by him.
They were, until I found out the price. And it wasn't Gregory Peck, it was Clark Gable.
Now, Sherman...
Mr. Pomeroy, if I may be permitted to say, whatever the price, it was not too high. These are really fine relics. Oh, that jade amulet. Those cuneiform tablets. The inlaid casket. But that's not Ramesses or Minos. Tutankhamun, is it not?
Why, yes, it is.
Ah, you're most fortunate. A near priceless antiquity. But the Amenhotep, that lazuli statuette, that is the real treasure.
The statuette? You're interested in that?
A good deal more than interested, Mrs. Pomeroy. Frankly, the statuette was my main purpose in coming to your country.
Sherman, what did I tell you? My husband was opposed to my buying the statuette, Mr. Hamid, but I just knew it had value.
Value? My dear Mrs. Pomeroy, on behalf of the Cairo Society of Antiquities, I'm authorized to offer you a certified check for it in the amount of $100,000.
Mr. Hammond, you have just bought yourself a Lazuzi statuette.
Now, just a minute,
Grace, now, for the love of Pete, don't tell me we're not selling.
For one moment, Mr. Pomeroy, your wife is right. You are entitled to an explanation.
Certified check is explanation enough for me.
Sherman, really? Mr. Hammond, I must apologize.
No, not at all. On the other side of the fence, I feel... quite the same way. The millions to be gained mean little to me, of course, but the historical value...
Well, millions?
About 200 millions, Mr. Pomeroy, to estimate conservatively.
Conservatively?
From our statuette.
Well, not quite, Mrs. Pomeroy. 200 millions from the tomb of Queen Astemhib, whose grave has never been located, and which is supposed to contain the richest treasure ever known to mankind.
You don't say.
But how does that connect with the statuette, Mr. Hamid?
In this way, Mrs. Pomeroy. The connection goes back some 3,000 years when grave robbers located the tomb of Amenhotep II. Among the relics they stole and subsequently sold were three lazuli statuettes. They didn't know it, but in the base panel of one of those three was a clay tablet of hieroglyphics, showing the exact site of the queen's grave.
You mean to say my statuette?
I mean to say, sir, the other two are in the hands of the Cairo Society, and neither contained the clay tablet. I mean to say, sir, unless 12 years of research proves incredibly wrong, the greatest secret of our age is in this house, in this room, in this very statuette that I'm holding.
Oh, no.
May I open the panel now, Mr. Pomeroy?
Well,
naturally, it is understood we're partners now. By law, half of any discovery becomes the property of the Egyptian government. But the other half will become the property of the Cairo Society and yourselves, evenly divided.
Well, open the panel by all means, Mr. Hammond. Go right ahead.
Thank you. 3,000 years of history. A staggering moment, is it not? Well, as you Americans say, we might as well get it over with.
Back to Grave Era in just a moment. Friends, Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum is a refreshing, delicious treat you can enjoy even while you're working, driving your car, or busy doing other things. Just slip a stick into your mouth and chew it as long as you like. The pleasant chewing will make the time pass more pleasantly for you, and you'll enjoy that cooling, refreshing flavor. It'll help to keep your mouth and throat moist, a real help on warm summer days. Keep a package or two of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy all the time. Chew and enjoy it often, as millions do. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Act two of tonight's story on the FBI in Peace and War, Grave Era.
The principal lead we had on Abner Hamill was a clay tablet of improvised hieroglyphics from one of his recent victims. This tablet was given to our laboratory for classification as to type of stone and cut. Laboratory reported that the work was the kind done by cemetery stone builders. We decided to visit the various display yards in the local area and order a tablet made which would provide a comparison with the kind used by Hamill.
Tablets, certainly. Bronze and marble, very fine. I can quote you a nice price.
What about clay?
Well, clay I wouldn't recommend. It wouldn't stand up. I'm only being honest.
Well, that's all right. The man it's for always dealt in clay.
With sentimental values, who am I to argue? Clay tablet with what on it?
We'd like special lettering done. Here's the wording here. Now, can you duplicate this lettering?
Listen, even if it was Greek, I could duplicate it.
It is Greek, Mr. Hiller.
Huh?
How long will it take you to complete the job?
Well, in English, a week, but in Greek, how's 10 days?
We'll be back then, Mr. Hiller. Let's go, Dave.
The tablet will be ready, gentlemen, and if I say so myself, your friend will be pleased with my work. Haven't had one complaint yet, so help me.
While we were going through our list of memorial display yards, Abner Hamill's scheme was gaining momentum through the deciphering services of his confederate, Doc Percy.
And this is Mrs. Pomeroy, Doctor, the lady I spoke about. Mrs. Pomeroy, Dr. Dimitri Persepolis.
How do you do, Doctor?
Not too well, I am afraid, Mrs. Pomeroy. Yes, my heartburn has been troubling me lately, and I have a skin ailment that refuses to go away.
That's too bad.
I trust your health did not interfere with your work on the tablet, Doctor?
Naturally, it did not interfere. I am Dimitri Persepolis. But in all my years, I have never seen such evasive symbols. All night long it took to decipher. Oh, they will come to bury me before the week is out.
Doctor, couldn't you let us know now what you found?
What else am I doing? I have my findings right here, all written down for you. No, that's my lumbago prescription. That reminds me, I'm just out of capsules. Here we are. I knew it was somewhere. Now, let's see, where did I put my glasses?
You have them on, Doctor.
Oh, yes. So I have. Now, you understand, this will be literal. Every word I put down exactly as it was carved into the clay centuries ago. You know, I'm as blind as a bat without these glasses.
Dr. Persepolis.
Read and stop talking, I know. All right, then. Amenhotep, great king, king of kings. All ancient cuneiform begins in this manner. Very interesting.
Very. Go on, please.
Yes. King of kings, O God Osiris, he. Atop the pyramid of Tuthotep, great king, king of kings, there stands a temple. Go out into that temple, divine one, and in the floor will be seen two tiles. Lift them. Beneath there will be a chamber cut in the rock, and at the end a loose wall. Move it aside. Within is a deep well. Go down into that well, and there will the divine one behold the treasure-laden grave.
And when he got through with the reading, I was sure I'd faint. Mr. Hamid was already on the phone trying to reach Cairo, and Dr. Persepolis said the discovery was more important than the Cheops solar boat. Sherman, will you stop eating and listen to me?
Oh, I'm listening now. What's eating got to do with listening? Now, more important than Cheops. Go on.
I won't say another word till you stop chewing.
All right, I stopped.
Well, you've heard just about everything. What about it?
What about what?
Joining the expedition. Now, you're not going to stand by and let that Cairo Society take all the credit.
Oh, let them take the credit. We'll take the cash. What's for dessert?
Oh, Sherman.
Now, look, Grace, I'm in sweaters, not antiques. And if there's one thing I learned the hard way, it's not to play in the other fellow's backyard.
The Egyptian desert is hardly a backyard, Sherman.
Well, whatever it is. Digging in sand may be up Mr. Hammond's alley, but I never went for it, even at the beach.
Now, Sherman, you had the same attitude when Mr. Hamid wanted to buy the statuette for a measly $100,000. I wouldn't let you talk me into it then, and I'm not going to now.
Now, look, how was I to know that
you... Why, this is a chance of a lifetime, dear. You could have your picture in the papers, and we could have the kind of vacation we've always dreamed about.
Now, look, how was I to know that
you... Why, this is a chance of a lifetime, dear. You could have your picture in the papers, and we could have the kind of vacation we've always dreamed about.
Well, I admit my picture in the papers wouldn't hurt business.
Of course, darling. And listen, an atmosphere like the pyramids might inspire a brand new sweater slogan.
What? What's wrong with it? If it isn't Pomeroy, it isn't fitting.
There's nothing wrong with it, dear. I only say...
The advertising agency admitted they couldn't come up with a better one, you know.
Yes, I know, dear. I didn't mean your slogan wasn't a winner. I only meant that new surroundings like this might spark plug your whole fall campaign.
Well...
Now, you know it would. Oh, come on, Sherman. Let's have some real fun for once in our lives.
For once now, I like that.
Well, you know what I mean, dear. Nose away from the old grindstone.
Well, I could sure use a rest, I'll tell you that.
Of course you could. And you could finally wear that pith helmet you bought at Abercrombie's and those khaki shorts that they wouldn't let you wear at the country club.
Yeah, okay, I'm sold.
You mean we're going?
Yeah, sure, it's like you said. No sense letting that Cairo Society take all the credit.
Oh.
And besides, it just occurred to me. A trip like this is deductible. Uncle Sam will be paying for it. Now can I eat?
By all means, Sherman, go and eat. Eat all you want.
Back to Grave Era in just a moment. Friends, next time you chew a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, notice how cool and fresh it makes your mouth feel. That's because Wrigley's Spearmint Gum has lots of lively, refreshing flavor in every stick. The minute you sink your teeth in, that delicious, cooling flavor begins to freshen your taste and relieve that hot, dry feeling in your throat. It sweetens your breath, too. And the pleasant chewing adds enjoyment to whatever else you're doing. So chew and enjoy good-tasting Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day, as millions do. That's Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Three of tonight's story on the FBI in Peace and War, Grave Era.
When we had received our various clay tablets from the display yards, the laboratory technicians compared them with the one used by Hamill. It was definitely established that Max Hiller had done Hamill's work. And while we were talking to Hiller, Doc Percy was talking to Hamill about setting up the final payoff.
And that's all I do, Ham? Call you at Pomeroy's during dinner?
That's all, Doc. Call me without Greek accents. Only make sure that the kid's clear that the call is from Cairo.
Cairo? I knew it. Ham, you keep making things so fancy when it could all be so simple.
Not fancy, Doc. Smooth, clever, and above all, professional.
I still like it nice and easy, like that last job.
Oh, nonsense. This is the easiest thing we'll ever pull. All it takes is a long-distance call during dinner. The society wants to maintain absolute excavation secrecy. It's better if a private individual makes out the checks. Now tell me, what's easier than that?
After we talked to Max Hiller, Agent Reynolds and I proceeded to the Mason City Hotel where Abner Hamill was registered as Abdul Bey Hamid. He wasn't in when we arrived, but word had conveniently been left at the desk as to his whereabouts for the evening. And so we proceeded to the home of Sherman Pomeroy.
Well, now, gentlemen, I'm afraid I'm not quite with you.
Well, that's understandable enough, Mr. Pomeroy. But if you let us speak with Abner Hamill...
Hamill?
Or Hamid, if that's what he's calling himself now.
Well, I'm sorry. Like I just told you, there's no one here by that name.
There isn't.
No, sir. Looks to me like you have the wrong address. Now, maybe if you try Henry Leroy up the road a piece, you...
What is it, dear?
I'm sure I don't know, Grace. A couple of government men here looking for someone named...
Why are they looking here? Sherman, dear, the souffle is falling.
We apologize for interrupting your dinner, Mrs. Pomeroy. We wouldn't have if it wasn't important.
Important to whom? Washington is getting to be just too much. If it isn't the revenue people asking questions, it's some other branch. Honestly, I'm going to think twice before voting administration at 56.
Beg your pardon, Mr. Pomeroy.
Yes, what is it?
The telephone, sir. Cairo would like to speak with Mr. Hamid.
Oh, who would like to speak with me?
Not you, ma'am. Cairo would like Mr. Hamid. Will he take it in the foyer or in here?
I think Mr. Hamid will take it right here.
Now, gentlemen...
Mr. Pomeroy... Hamid sold you a bill of goods when he heard FBI, didn't he?
Well, nothing of the kind. I...
He's pulled the same stunt before. What was it this time? The government heard of his discovery and wanted a cut, so just say he wasn't here?
On the contrary, gentlemen, I simply told these good people the truth.
Mr. Hamid...
It's quite all right, Mrs. Pomeroy. We might as well have this out.
You told them the truth, huh?
Certainly. Grave robbers constantly follow my trail.
How am I to know who is legitimate and who is posing? You, gentlemen have credentials, I presume?
We have credentials, all right.
We also have you under arrest.
I beg your pardon.
Under arrest?
You'd better be careful of what you say, gentlemen. You are making an error.
An error that could cause serious international complications, I may add.
Oh, you think so, Mr. Pomeroy?
Well, I do. Cairo won't take lightly to this sort of bureaucratic butting in.
That's right, they won't. I've half a mind to call them and report this outrage.
You don't have to call them. They're calling you.
What?
See, I phlegm forgot. Cairo's on the phone now, Mr. Hammond. You can talk to them right here.
Cairo? Egypt?
Cairo, Egypt. You can report this outrage while Agent Reynolds listens in the foyer. Dave.
I see. Hello, Cairo?
Yes?
Sherman Pomeroy here. I have Mr. Hammond for you now.
Just a minute, Hammond. Where do you think you're going?
The extension's in there.
It is, and so is Agent Reynolds.
Hello. Hello?
Mr. Hamid, I think Cairo's getting impatient.
So am I, Emil. Either you answer or I will.
Here you are, sir.
Thanks. Hello. Abdul Bey Hamid speaking.
Hello, you phonies. This is me. So go ahead, give the spiel. I'm listening. Ham? Ham, are you there?
He's here, Doc. But he won't be for long. We're about to take him to headquarters.
What's this?
Hang up, Doc. It's the cops. Hang up and beat it.
Mr. Hamid.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Pomeroy. You had such great faith in me, but I had to warn, Doc. I apologize to you, gentlemen.
Oh, time. That's okay, Amel. The local police have a tracer on all calls to this address.
A tracer? Well, I'm not surprised.
Come on, Amel. We might as well get started.
One moment, gentlemen. Mrs. Pomeroy.
Yes?
It seems that my belongings and I are about to be parted presently, and I wouldn't want this to fall on evil hands. As mutual lovers of antiquities, will you care for it until my return?
What is that thing?
That thing, sir, is a diadem from the Mayan temple of Kukulkan, inscribed with treasure symbols of the high priest.
Oh.
Perhaps at a future date, Mrs. Pomeroy, you and I will be able to...
Amel.
Yes?
You heard what Agent Reynolds said. We might as well get started.
Oh, very well, if you insist. But I still say you're making an error.
I know, a grave error. Come on, let's go. Abner B. Hamill and Doc Percy pleaded guilty to the numerous charges of fraud and threw themselves on the mercy of the court. Both received sentences of 3 to 5 years in prison. Hamill's confession implicated Max Hiller, who nevertheless convinced a jury that his part in the swindle was only incidental. Accepting the recommendation for clemency, the presiding judge put him on probation for a period of 2 years. The Lazuli statuette still stands in the cabinet of the Pomeroy home, and our books are closed on the lively scheme that wound up a grave error.
Friends, one of the reasons it's a good idea to chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum often is that it satisfies you without being rich or filling. There's lots of delicious, long-lasting flavor in a stick of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. Real taste enjoyment. And besides, you get enjoyment from the pleasant chewing. It gives you a nice little lift and helps tide you over till mealtime. Helps keep your mouth moist, your taste fresh, too. So do what millions do. Keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy and enjoy it every day. It tastes so good, lasts so long, and gives you real chewing enjoyment. In tonight's story, Paul McGrath played the part of Abner B. Hamill, and Bill Smith was Sherman Pomeroy. This radio dramatization for the FBI in Peace and War was written by Jack Anson Fink. These programs are produced and directed by Betty Mandeville. All names and characters used on the program are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. This program is based on Frederick L. Collins' copyrighted book, The FBI in Peace and War, and the broadcast does not imply endorsement, authorization, or approval by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you real chewing enjoyment, invite you to listen to next Wednesday's story, Lucky Smith, on the FBI in Peace and War. Same time, same station.
William Gargan stars as Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
The brotherhood of man is a universal truth, in one instance anyhow. I never knew a corpse to show antagonism toward a fellow stiff.
The National Broadcasting Company presents William Gargan in another transcribed drama of mystery and adventure with America's number one detective, Barry Craig, confidential investigator.
Barry Craig speaking. Winter and snow do one of two things to a cliff dweller. He either packs his swimming trunks and suntan oil and mushes overland to a Florida beach, or he climbs into his mink-lined parka, throws his skis over his shoulder, and hops a ski train to Stowe, Vermont. I did the last mention. I sat on a train, wedged in with a bunch of ski lovers, and trained for the cold country. Not because of any yen to be an Eskimo, but for a much less noble reason. Said reason being the pursuit of a buck. Would I please come, the telegram said. When a client goes so far as to wire you, one fact is beautifully clear. This guy can afford you. In Stowe, Vermont, at the lodge, I baked the rheumatism out of my separate parts and joints in front of a roaring log fire the hotel provided. When the ice thawed out of my good ear, I got wind of what my client, an intense-looking chap named Parker, was trying to get across to me.
The tragedy happened 2 years ago. 2 years ago this week.
Your wife, Jean, fell 400 feet and suffered an injury to her spine.
Yes, someone had tampered with her ski straps, and on an especially steep and icy slope they broke. Jane was badly injured. She recovered, but is a hopeless paralytic.
100%?
No, just the lower limbs, starting at the waist. She's confined to a wheelchair.
2 years now?
Yes. Jean's been abroad all this time, undoubtedly consulting medical specialists, seeing if anything can be done to restore her.
But?
To the best of my knowledge, it's hopeless.
To the best of your knowledge? You're obviously not close to the situation.
No, I'm not. Since the accident, we've been estranged, Jean and I.
Nice time to cool off, told your wife.
It was not my wish. Jean excluded me from her problem. She turned me away.
Why?
Well, the answer to that is why I'm engaging you. Jean has never acquitted me in her thinking.
She suspects you?
Yes, me among others.
Oh, there are others who might have tried to do her in?
Yes, three others.
Name them.
My wife's brother, Tom Cooper, a man named Alan Loomis, and a lady magazine writer named Wilma West.
Well, what did they have against your wife 2 years ago?
Well, I'd rather not influence you with prejudices of my own. It'd be better if you found out for yourself.
I see. Well, answer me this. Why are you ordering an investigation now, 2 years after the mishap?
Well, it happened up here in 1952, this anniversary weekend. And strange as it may seem, Tom Cooper, Alan Loomis, Wilma West, and myself, the four suspects, we're all here right now.
Grand reunion.
Skiers come to ski country.
Criminals come back to the scene of the crime. Where is the victim right now? Your estranged wife, Jean. Don't tell me she's also in the lodge.
No, in the village, in a rented cottage.
Well, why is she in her condition?
I don't know. I've wondered about it, but I don't know.
What do you hope to gain from my investigation, Parker?
Vindication. Jean's goodwill. So I can live with myself.
Reinvestigate a 2-year-old accident. 2 years, I'd be plowing through a lot of cobwebs. Getting unpacked in my room, somebody went out of his way to make me feel unwelcome. Come in. A guy with one blue eye and a black patch where his other eye figured to be. A tough look to him. Like the world was too populated for his liking.
Am I intruding?
You not. I said come in.
You're Barry Craig.
That's how I registered.
A New York detective.
That's not on the register.
It's written all over you.
Which suspect are you?
Suspect? Now look here.
Relax. Well, which is it? Tom Cooper or an Alan Loomis?
I'm Tom Cooper.
This is Jean Parker's brother.
Jean's my sister, yes.
And you're here to threaten me.
To talk sense at you.
That's polite for threaten. So go ahead, worry me.
All right. I did come to say I don't relish being hounded and harassed by a detective. I'm here for fun and skiing.
Now, how do you know my intentions toward you?
I saw you closeted with my moron brother-in-law, Parker. Guessing Parker's scheme wasn't hard.
Scheme?
A grandstand play. Hire a detective to show how he's burning to unravel an old mystery. And by doing it, make himself look good.
Is that a hint you think Parker's responsible for his wife's condition?
Not only a hint, it's my opinion.
Accusation?
Accusation.
Slander. You can be sued by Parker.
Parker tries it, I'll brain him. Craig, go home.
True. In good time.
You'll just make a nuisance of yourself to everybody here.
What I'm paid for.
All right, milk the situation. Worry a case that had better be forgotten. But don't come near me.
Or?
Are you deliberately baiting me?
A guy looks and barks like he's Little Caesar. I'm always curious about the size of his bite. How do you want to leave, Cooper?
How do I?
Walking or crawling? Tom Cooper wasn't the only weekend skier who had me figured as a pesky killjoy. Another one tried to make me feel unwelcome. But this one wasn't as forward as Cooper. This one was the bashful type who believed in voicing his sentiments from afar. A rifle bullet through my room window. Not intended to kill me, just discourage me. The bullet lay at my feet. I pocketed it for a souvenir. No doubt about it, it was going to be a weekend to remember. Roads get impassable because of a snowblock. You give transportation back to the horses. I rented a sleigh drawn by a horse. My destination, the village. To introduce myself to Mrs. Jean Parker. Pay my respects. En route, still in sight of the lodge, a lady on snowshoes and bundled in furs like a mink polar bear hailed me like she wanted to thumb a ride.
Yoo-hoo, hey!
Yes?
Going to the village?
I am.
Can you take me?
Take lifts from strangers, lady. You're living dangerously.
You have a respectable look. Giddy up! Besides, you're not a stranger.
No?
No.
We have a past together, only I can't place the face.
Spoken like a male. You're Barry Craig, and I'm Wilma West.
Oh, another one of my suspects.
Yes, I'm a fiendish murderess.
Would-be murderess. The victim survived, I hear tell.
Victim. It's like a page out of ancient history, so remote.
Yeah, 2 years makes any event stale, except to the victim. Confined to a wheelchair, yesterday and today merge for you.
Put it that way, I'm chastened.
Anything you can tell me?
To clear myself of suspicion?
Don't work so hard at being sophisticated.
Oh, but I must. It's my style. It's my livelihood. I'm a sophisticated editor of a smart magazine.
Jean Parker. What did you have against her 2 years ago?
Let me see. Oh, yes, I was the other woman. The femme fatale, serpent in Jean's garden.
You and Parker?
Me and Evan Parker, yes.
Did Jean know?
Doesn't the wife always? She finds lipstick smears on handkerchiefs. Canceled checks for gifts she never got.
All kidding around, you and Parker. Or was there something for real between you?
Very real, Mr. Craig. Evan Parker loved me, and I loved Evan Parker.
But?
Jean wouldn't divorce him. She took it all very badly, very shabbily. She scratched and clawed. Did everything to embarrass and cheapen Evan's love for me.
How does it go between Evan Parker and you today?
Nothing, Mr. Craig. We're polite to each other. We're strangers. Jean sits in a wheelchair between us.
I suppose you know Evan Parker hired me to get at the truth.
Yes, I know. Evan feels guilty about what happened to Jean. I'll make a prophecy.
Yes?
You'll get nowhere at all with your investigation. You'll fail, as other investigations have failed before. You'll just renew misery for a lot of people, but accomplish nothing.
I'll spoil everybody's weekend. I keep hearing that. Well, here's the village. Where can I drop you?
Right here. You're, going to pay a call on Jean Parker?
You said magazine editor, but I think you're a mind reader. I tied my sleigh to a hitching post and started to slosh the 100-odd yards to Mrs. Jean Parker's cottage. But before I could make the front door, I had another interview forced on me. A guy standing to his side, a few feet away from Gene Parker's place. Standing like he'd planned it as an ambush for me.
Hey, you, Craig.
More people know my name up here.
And pedigree. You're a meddler.
Rough talk.
You'd crucify people for a few pieces of silver. Now look, stop stirring old ghosts. Stop reopening old wounds.
Stop spoiling skiers' weekends. I've met Evan Parker, Tom Cooper, and Wilmer West. By elimination, I guess you to be Alan Loomis.
I'm Alan Loomis.
Once involved with Mrs. Jean Parker. How?
None of your business.
In that case, so long.
Hey, wait. I was in love with Jean before she married Parker. She left me at the altar to run off with Parker. It's old ghosts. I said you'd stir them. Go home, Craig.
When I wrap this up? Crime's committed. Somebody must be punished. You through discouraging me?
No. I can be stubborn, too. And determined.
Sure. You're the type hero who can stand in an ambush somewhere and pump rifle bullets into a hotel room. You're not denying you took a pot shot at me a few hours ago.
Craig, go home. Amicably with a bonus check from me or in some other way.
In a hearse?
Even perhaps in a hearse.
I was on my way to see Jean Parker when you waylaid me. Do I have to punch my way to her door? Finally, at long last, I got to sit with Mrs. Jean Parker. Once pretty, but now very thin, with deep hollows in her cheeks, and eyes that looked burned out by fever. She was in a cronium wheelchair, a plaid blanket covering her lower limbs.
I wish you hadn't come here, Mr. Craig. Evan Parker engaging you, it can serve no good now.
You want to forget it?
Yes, I do.
Parker's my client. I'll do what he engaged me to do. Clear him of responsibility for your mishap. Pin the blame on who really engineered it. You can help me.
How?
Information and stuff.
Anybody could have tampered with my skis so that I'd plunge to my death.
Anybody meaning, your husband, because you wouldn't divorce him. Wilmer West, a rival who hated you. Alan Loomis, the suitor you left waiting at the altar when you married Parker. And your brother, Tom Cooper.
And my brother, Tom.
What cooked between you and your brother?
A paltry sum of money. Our father died. The will left everything to me. Less than $10,000. Tom was resentful. Money was always his creed and his god. Tom accused me of exercising undue influence over our father, of poisoning father against him.
Why are you up here in Stowe?
Sentiment, I suppose. Paradoxical as that may seem. I'm half a woman, but my feelings are whole. All of my youth, I came here for the winter snows, the winter fun.
I see.
You shouldn't have called on me, Mr. Craig.
See a woman in the prime of youth, like Jean Parker was in the prime of her youth, but crippled, only able to live in a narrow area through which she could propel her wheelchair. The picture stays with you. Four suspects. If one of them had actually schemed the accident, I kept wondering how the guilty party could live with himself, or herself, if it was Wilmer West. The last mentioned party joined me at lunch in the big hotel dining room. Uninvited, she just plopped down.
Don't look so put upon, Mr. Craig.
Frankly, I'm not in a social mood.
I am. I'm starved. What's good?
Read the menu.
Prime roast beef. Food for a ravenous skier. Order it for me with A1 sauce, Mr. Craig. No, not Mr. Craig. Barry.
Charlie, come here. Roast beef for the lady. You've got away with men, huh, Miss West?
I'm at home with men. I had 7 brothers.
I never had a sister. That makes me a woman hater.
Oh, I wouldn't be discouraged. You'll accept me, or I'll force myself on you.
It won't help your case, baby, if you're the guilty party.
I wonder, will you be so blasé about my charms tonight?
What's tonight?
The weekend dance, and I'll be wearing a Parisian import.
Meaning I'll go for the dress, if not the woman?
I don't look to advantage in these ski clothes. I'm overdressed, dramatically speaking.
Well, I've finished eating. So long.
Barry, don't make me eat alone. Barry!
The guy never lived who could shake a determined dame. She cornered me again on the ski slope. I wasn't skiing, just looking. I couldn't afford to break a leg, not while I was working.
Barry?
Breathless over me?
Yes and no. Climb up the slope, I'm winded. I've got something to show you.
What?
This note. Threat against my life.
Wilma, enjoy the short weekend. Your last. Where did you receive this?
From Tom Cooper.
Tom Cooper?
By hand. It had been slipped under his door, he said. By mistake, it seemed, since it was addressed to me.
That's a funny note. Where's Tom now?
Taking the high jump.
Show me the way. We got within view of Cooper, maybe 200 yards away. Cooper poised like an Olympic skier on the most dangerous jump in the area.
That's Tom Cooper up there on the peak.
Yeah. Let's get down to the base. He'll jump, and we'll meet him below.
All right.
Only we weren't going to get to meet Cooper below. Cooper, in fact, wasn't ever going to make the jump. A rifle shot from an angle I couldn't figure, the way altitude reverberates sound. But an accurate shot, it dropped Cooper dead in his tracks.
Tom! He's been shot!
He didn't just fall. Go stay with Cooper. I want to scout the area for the riflemen. I found a lot of snowmen, but no human being. Hiding out of sight wasn't tough for an assassin at any compass point. There were ravines and rocks and woods. Besides that, stare out at snow like I was. Your focus goes awry. You get snowblind. I joined Wilma.
Tom's dead.
Yeah. Drill in the right temple. Somebody up here is a superb marksman.
What do we do?
Find a sled somewhere and get Cooper to the local undertaker. Then inform the coroner. Want to stay here while I go get a sled?
No. I'm coming with you.
Murder. Tom Cooper, Mrs. Jean Parker's brother. We brought the body into the village on a horse-drawn sleigh. Wilma went the whole morbid route with me. She was afraid not to. Afraid to be on her own, out of my sight. After a formal report on how Cooper came to get shot, the local sheriff did some theorizing.
An accident. Some bad shot in those woods who has no right to own a gun.
It wasn't an accident, Sheriff.
Oh, come now, Craig. Don't pump this up to more than it is.
Cooper was shot from a distance by a high-powered rifle with modern range sights. Shot by a top marksman. It took only one bullet. I call that very skillful murder.
Now, why would anyone want to murder this Tom Cooper?
Well, that's a long story. And even if I don't know the half of it yet, but it's murder, bet on it.
It was murder, Sheriff. Look here. This note. It's a threat to murder me.
A threat? Let me see. Wilma. That you, ma'am?
Yes, I'm Wilma.
Enjoy the short weekend. Your last. Now, how is that a threat, like you say?
Can't you read?
He obviously can't.
Oh, now you're getting steam heated, you two. I read the paper, and I say it might mean anything. I'm marking Tom Cooper down as an accidental shooting.
We left the sheriff muttering to himself and started back to the hotel. It was growing dark, and the temperature had dropped enough to make us human icicles in the front seat of the rig. Wilma sat as close as she could get, warmth being at a premium like it was. Halfway between the town and the lodge, Wilma lost the little warmth I could give her. She went from cold to ice cold.
Barry!
You're shot.
How did I...
It's an ambush from anywhere in the south woods flanking the road. Where do you feel it?
Here in my chest. It hurts, Barry.
There's a hotel, doctor. I've got to get you there.
Barry?
Yes, Wilma.
I won't make it. I won't make it.
She wouldn't make it. I knew. looking at her, watching life flicker, then go. The second murder in a matter of hours. I turned the sleigh around. I had another corpse to turn over to the village authorities. Later at the hotel, my client, Evan Parker, put on quite a show of nerve.
Craig, I've tried to contact you everywhere.
Everywhere is where I've been. When you hired me, you didn't mention mortician's duties.
Two frightful murders. What does it mean?
Somebody is haywire with a rifle.
But why? What reason was there to kill Tom and Wilma?
I can't answer that. I could try, I guess.
Yes?
To shut them up. Say Tom and Wilma knew who'd arranged your wife's mishap 2 years ago.
You think Tom and Wilma knew?
It's possible, but as I said, it's only a guess.
Well, dignifying your guess, if Tom and Wilma knew and were themselves innocent, then your theory can point to only one person.
Like?
Alan Loomis. He's all that's left.
Tom, Wilma, Loomis equals three. There were four suspects to the plot against your wife.
Four? Oh, you're including me.
Let's say I'm not excluding you.
You think I'd hire you, bring you all the way from New York, if I was the guilty one?
Guilty parties have hired me before, in other cases. I'm a screen they can hide behind.
It's not like that in my case.
I hope not, for your sake.
Loomis. It has to be Loomis. Find him. Arrest him. Force him to confess. Loomis, he's your man.
I went looking for Loomis. I called his room, then checked the desk. It began to look as if Parker was right about Loomis. Loomis had skipped in a hurry. Hello? Operator, get me the sheriff's office. Hello, Sheriff. Barry Craig. A suspected murderer is trying to leave town. Alan Loomis, about 35. Tall, over 6 feet, brown hair. Grab him and don't let go till I get there.
Loomis turned up somewhere else right after you telephoned me.
You've got him?
I have.
Where is he?
In the undertaking parlor with the other two. And one bullet in him. Clean, like the other two.
Where did you find Loomis like that?
Right in the village. Sitting on a sleigh without a stir to him. Not 50 feet away from Peck's hardware store.
Four suspects and three of them dead. That left Parker, guilty by elimination. Only thing, if multiple murder was Parker's reason for weekending in Stowe, why had he hired me to play spectator to murder? Me snooping around. I could only mean trouble for him. I went back to see Parker, tell him the sad news about Loomis. He wasn't in his room. I called the main desk. Hello? This is Barry Craig. I'm up in Evan Parker's room. He's not in. Will you page him for me? What? Oh, Mount Mansfield. Thanks. Mount Mansfield. I went to get into my snowshoes. I spied Parker from a distance of 100 yards, toiling upgrade where the slope began to rise. He had his skis perpendicular to his back, and something that looked like a rod or stick wrapped in burlap slung under his arm. I got within hailing distance. Parker! Hey, Parker! He looked like he wanted to run. But how could he, ankle deep in the snow? Then as I got close, he looked like he wanted to melt in the snow and die. I didn't waste any time on protocol. What are you lugging, Parker?
I thought I'd practice the jump, so I strapped my skis together.
I'm not talking about skis. Wrapped in burlap, what is it?
A pole for balance.
It's too short for that. It's only about as long as a rifle. Do I have to wrestle you for it?
No. It's a rifle.
High-powered with a modern rangefinder?
Yes.
And evidence in it of 3 shots fired, maybe?
Evidence of 3 shots fired.
Cooper, Wilma, and Loomis.
Cooper, Wilma, and Loomis.
You sound like you're confessing.
I came up here to dispose of the rifle, hide it, but now...
But now?
I don't care to save myself.
3 murders. Why?
One of them paralyzed Jean.
All of them could have, for the grudge they bore her. I meted out punishment equally.
You crazy or pretending?
I'm your prisoner.
Get the burlap off that rifle and demonstrate for me.
Demonstrate?
How good a marksman you are. Pick something off for me at a minimum of 200 yards. One shot. Show me a bullseye with one shot. Show me, Parker. After Parker demonstrated what a marksman he was, I went to see Mrs. Jean Parker. An informal visit this time, around the back of the house. I didn't announce myself right away. I just stood in the yard and aimed the rifle at a rear window. My second shot was aimed at a window on the side of the cottage. With that, I hurried around to the front of the house and went in with a crash through the door. Fear does remarkable things to people. It gives them a strength and frenzy. It even helps paralytics to rediscover their legs. There was Jean Parker, out of her wheelchair, standing flat against the wall, to be where the bullets weren't.
Mr. Craig.
Yeah, Craig. Fancy seeing you out of your wheelchair.
You were the one firing.
I was the crazy assassin. I figured you'd hate being a sitting duck in a wheelchair, life being precious, even to a murderer.
You're very clever.
Yeah. I began being clever when your husband couldn't hit a tree at 200 yards, or even 50, yet was confessing to 3 murders. You planted the murder rifle in this room. This rifle I'm holding.
Did I, Mr. Craig?
Parker guessed your secret just before I did. That the paralysis was a fraud. A blind you could operate behind. A fraud altogether, or that a temporary condition had been remedied abroad in the 2 years you were away.
I underwent 27 operations.
Parker was ready to shoulder the blame, to save you. He didn't yell frame up. He tried confessing to the murder.
Noble of Evan. I'm touched.
3 murders and your husband, the patsy. You wanted them all dead.
I wanted them all to get what they deserved.
Yeah. 27 operations. The suffering you've been put to for 2 years. I guess the mind does crack under a weight like that. I guess you don't stop to think that only one of them was responsible for the accident.
Nobody was ever able to detect the one.
So you convicted all 4 of them and planned their execution.
I'm not sorry, Mr. Craig. I'm not a bit sorry.
I am. Right now, I'm sorry for you.
You've been listening to William Gargan in another exciting transcribed mystery drama from the adventures of Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Tonight's story, Zero Hour, was written by John Robert. Next week, it's the strange story titled For Love of Murder, about which Barry Craig has this to say.
Next week, the ways of a maid with a man is so torrid it electrifies the poor stiff. Sends him right out of this world. Do I mean literally? I wonder. Good night, folks. See you next week.
The National Broadcasting Company has brought you William Gargan, starring as Barry Craig, confidential investigator. Featured in the role of Wilma was Connie Ford. This is Don Pardo speaking.
Jack Webb stars in Dragnet next on the NBC Radio Network.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Be back next Wednesday with another hour. In the meantime, you can find past episodes of this show at relicradio.com, alongside more episodes from FBI and Peace and War, Barry Craig, all the other podcasts, and everything else Relic Radio. There's also a link there to our donate button. If you enjoy this and all the shows, would like to help out, click on that. Thank you, as always, to those who have. And thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.